Welcome to Medicine on Call. This is Dr. Elena George, and I want to welcome a special guest this morning, Dr. Richard Amerling. He is a nephrologist. For those who don't know, that's a kidney specialist who practices in New York. He's a clinical professor at Beth Israel Medical Center and a member of the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, and someone who's been on the front line of fighting the changes that have come through under Obamacare, and a real patient advocate and a colleague, and I'm honored to have you on my show today, Dr. Amerling. Thank you for coming.
My pleasure.
You wrote an amazing op-ed a few days ago about opting out, and this has been a mantra of mine for the past several weeks because I saw the writing on the wall, and I knew that the only way that Abominable Care Act would work is if they got bodies in there, specifically young people, because they need, it's a Ponzi scheme, they need to prime the pump, get the money in, and then spread the wealth, quote unquote. And you wrote an op-ed that made me think a little bit differently. You talked about seniors and about Medicare recipients who, they also need to think about the same thing. I thought they were a captive audience, but in actuality, they may not be. Am I correct?
That's right. Seniors do not have to enroll in Medicare Part B, and Part B is what pays for doctors and outpatient service. Part A is hospital insurance, and that is more or less obligatory, because if you do not enroll in Part A, you lose your Social Security benefits, which is a scandal in and of itself, and that I know has been challenged in court, but I don't think it was successful. But there's no reason why you should have to enroll in Medicare Part A at pain of losing your Social Security benefits. But nevertheless, that's the state of affairs right now. However, Part B is optional, and you pay premiums on Part B. Now, they're not huge. I mean, they're really discounted. Mm-hmm. But the quality of doctor that you're going to get in Medicare Part B is going to be going down for the simple reason that the payments to these doctors has been on the decline. And at a certain point in the very near future, it's going to reach Medicaid levels of payment. And we know that very few good private physicians will accept more than a handful of Medicaid patients because they lose money on them. So you're going to be in exactly the same situation as Medicaid patients are in now.
And the interesting thing about Obamacare is that they've extended Medicaid for all, Medicare for all. So they're extending out the economic baseline. So more people in the middle class are going to be sucked down into the sinkhole of being eligible, which is like they're trying to say it's a good thing, and it's not eligible for Medicare or Medicaid. And I agree with you. The system is broken. And I think we were sold a bill of goods. I mean, if over 80% of people were happy with their insurance and they broke the system just to supposedly incorporate another 20%, when in actuality what they did is screw it up for everybody, then we need to be aware of that. I think that the rollout is one example of how bad this is going to be. And you're a professor. You teach medical students. Am I correct?
That's right.
I want to just ask you a quick question. I graduated not too long ago, but when I was in medical school at Mount Sinai, I won't say. When I was in school at Mount Sinai, we actually had, you know, it was before the Libby Zion case, about that same time. So we took call. We were on call for 48 hours, 72 hours. We actually finished treating the patient. It wasn't a shift situation. Has the mindset of medical students changed? What are you seeing differently now as a professor versus when you trained? Because I think we are in the same cohort where we understand what it's a calling. It's not just a job. You actually sacrifice yourself for your patients. Has the mindset changed?
I think it has clearly changed. I mean, we went through what we refer to now as the days of the giants. I was on call for 48 hours straight as well, and you had to learn to function under those sort of circumstances. It was sort of like the SEAL training when they put them through Hell Week. They deprive them of sleep and they force them to function under adverse conditions. Well, because you never know what's going to happen, and you have to be able to do it. So that simply doesn't exist anymore. It's now shift work.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people that come into medicine now are expecting to have a very reasonable lifestyle with regular hours. They're not expecting to be burnt out by their training.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a resident, there was a one female house officer. Now they're the majority. It's become a very big social scene. I mean, it looks like a lot of fun to me now, but I'm not sure that it's going to be the doctors who are going to be bending over backwards and fighting the devil to save their patients. I mean, people are good. Don't get me wrong. People are smart and good, and we keep interviewing people who have excellent grades and very smart folks. But I just don't think the commitment is there as it was back when we were doing our training. That's all I can say.
Is there any feeling, because when I'm on the other side of this where I work in the hospital, so I mean, I take call, and my interaction is not with an MD most of the time anymore. It's with a PA, it's with a nurse practitioner, it's with some extender who is the front line of care. Are they happy? I mean, maybe they don't know what good is, I would think, but it's like doctors are taking a back seat. And that seems to be the trend. It's the cheapest iteration of healthcare delivery because it's about cost control. Do they not see that they're kind of just administrators, not really practicing physicians? Or is that how you see it?
Well, there are a large number of physician assistants. That's a very big, growing area of medicine. Nurse practitioners also. And, of course, there are very good people in both of those areas. But when you're getting care from them, you should know that you're not getting the same sort of depth of care. In other words, their training, particularly for the physician assistants, which is really a short course of training, is basic, and they don't have the deep understanding of anatomy, physiology, biochemistry that we all get going through medical school, and pathology and pathophysiology, which is crucial to be able to really think creatively about an individual patient. So they're going to be able to follow a very standardized approach to care, which we, of course, provide them when we write these practice guidelines, which are becoming dominant in the delivery of healthcare. And I think these are an abomination because they force people into a one-size-fits-all kind of approach, which cannot possibly be good medical care.
I absolutely agree with you. I like to term it cookbook medical care. And it's algorithm-driven, and it's not, I mean, you're a professor. Have they ever sat down with you as a nephrologist and said, we want your thoughts on how to treat patients? Or are they telling you from the hospital, this is the hospital protocol, follow it?
Right. I mean, so many things are protocol, and it's, I think, an abomination. For example, every patient at my hospital, if they're diabetic, when they come into the hospital, is started on sliding scale insulin treatment, whether they're on insulin or not as an outpatient, and whether insulin is actually good for them. Wow. And but this has just become protocol for treatment based on, you know, maybe one study that is highly flawed. There have been a lot of hypoglycemic episodes.
Oh, wow.
People are upset. They're getting finger sticks around the clock, and they're getting stuck with insulin needles around the clock. Insulin therapy in the hospital can't possibly have any real impact on the course of their diabetes as an outpatient.
Mm.
Doesn't make any sense, but that's what's being done. And algorithms such as this are being placed into the electronic health record, and that is one of the big reasons why there's such a push from the government for all doctors to have electronic health records. They're going to be inserting algorithms to guide treatment decisions in your office through the EHR.
For our listeners, can you tell us what meaningful use is? Because that's an offshoot of what you just said.
Right, right. Meaningful use is the reporting of certain clinical data points to the central payers, i.e. the government. So in order to qualify for certain better reimbursement or less bad reimbursement or less bad payment from Medicare, you will have to add information into your health record that will be transmitted to the database, the central database, about whether or not patients are smokers. And the latest version of EHRs that are coming out are also including meaningful use questions that are very detailed sexual history questions that are, I mean, they may be appropriate in some patients, but certainly not all. But the point is, they're getting doctors into this mindset of reporting to the government data about their patients. And they're going to start off small. They're going to start off with blood pressure and diabetes control and things like that. But then it will get increasingly invasive, and then it's going to, that information is going to be used to pick out good and bad doctors, according to them, pay them less or more, and try to control medical practice.
I think it can even go further. Not only will it pick out quote-unquote good and bad doctors, but it'll have a chilling effect on the doctor-patient relationship. And I think under peer review and, you know, maintenance of certification, they're going to weed out doctors who will go along and get along and no longer be an advocate for their patient, but be happily agents of the government.
Right. I'm sure that that's what's going to happen. So we are really heading for a two-tier system. There will be the government-controlled system that will largely be run through the hospital, either in the hospital itself or the hospital outpatient facility. And those doctors are going to go along with the protocols and the algorithms, and they're going to dutifully report the data that they're supposed to report, and they will, they'll be bribed, in effect, by the government or by the hospital to do that. And then there will be the private doctors who refuse to go along, and they will continue to try to make it in the outpatient sector. And the only way they are going to be able to survive is by going to direct pay or concierge-type practice, where they have a patient who comes to see them and pays at the point of service, and they avoid the government intrusion, they avoid the paperwork, they can keep records confidential, and that is where you're going to have high-quality care. And mm-hmm. what I'm advising patients is to try to get doctors like this. Get yourself out of the Obamacare system, whether it be Medicaid, Medicare, or Obamacare. It's all going to be the same. It's all going to be the same disaster once it gets rolling. It'll be like Medicaid is now, which the Wall Street Journal recently wrote is called Obamacade. It's the worst possible health insurance plan you could have, and you're probably better off with nothing than having Medicaid. So find a doctor, pay them directly. You can get great discounts. Doctors are very happy to bargain and negotiate. And the more, what I said in my article is that the more people that opt out of Obamacare and Medicaid and Medicare, the more patients will be available for doctors who want to go purely private, and that market will start to flourish.
Absolutely right. And, you know, most people think, I think we've been brainwashed into thinking that if you have to pay out of pocket to a doctor, it's going to be some crazy amount of money. That's actually not the case. I have done numerous interviews where I've actually said to people, you won't believe this, but it's cheaper to not access your insurance, but to pay out of pocket to go for surgeries, to go for radiology exams, to see private doctors, because there's no middleman. There's nobody jacking up the price and inserting themselves and literally taking the profit out of the transaction, like the government, like private insurance companies. And if you don't have somebody telling you that you need a pre-certification for a lab test or a procedure, and it's you and the patient together making a decision, that is the best, that is medicine. That's what medicine is supposed to be about. Not a gatekeeper who doesn't even understand what the procedure is. I've gone through like a maze with Blue Cross Blue Shield recently where they're telling me something's experimental that's covered by every other insurance company in the country, including the government, and patients are suffering and they're just denying whole cloth, not even looking at any literature that I've sent in. That's only a small version of what I think the government will do. They're bigger than Blue Cross, and they could care less because you're not a person, you're a cost center.
Sure, it's the worst possible way to finance healthcare. It's not insurance. Insurance covers you for a catastrophic illness or accident where you have huge bills. They don't cover that. I mean, they say they do, but they really don't. I mean, they're happy to pay for the niggling things that you could pay for yourself. So they'll happily pay the doctor $40 or $50. By the way, you know, they discount what they pay doctors.
Oh, yeah.
And what you said before is really true. Doctors have never accounted for more than 50, maybe 20% at most of total health expenditures. So we're the most economic and productive part of the whole healthcare system. And everybody else is making money hand over fist. The administrative sector has grown like crazy, and it would have to administer this kind of ridiculous system where every medical encounter generates a bill and some sort of paperwork. It's absolutely absurd.
Agreed. On that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
This is Dr. Elena George with your health tip of the day. Did you know that an inability to lose weight can be due to an underactive thyroid gland? The thyroid gland is an important organ that controls the metabolism. Signs of an underactive thyroid gland include depression, hair loss, weight gain, a low blood pressure, feeling cold, constipation, and a lower libido. Risks for low thyroid function include iron deficiency, liver dysfunction, family history of thyroid disease, and an irregularity in the immune system. If you have noticed any of these symptoms, or you have noticed swelling in the front of your neck, or the color of your shirt feels tight, you should see your doctor for further evaluation, including blood tests to evaluate the levels of thyroid hormone in your bloodstream. Please join me Wednesdays at 9 a.m. for Medicine on Call. This is Dr. Elena George.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. This is Dr. George, and we're speaking today with Dr. Richard Amerling, Associate Professor Beth Israel, a nephrologist, and an outspoken, forward-thinking physician who cares about where medicine is going and his patients, and the kind of doctor that I think that everybody needs to know about so they can go to. Thanks again, Dr. Amerling, for coming on.
My pleasure.
I wanted to tease out what we said before the break. You know, that there's a two-tier system coming down the pipe. I think it's already here, frankly. I just think it's going to be made rigid.
Right.
We talked about how doctors are being bribed, but there's another end to this. There's a bully pulpit or a stick that's also being wielded against docs. One is the reimbursements. You know, if you're a private practitioner, if you do take insurance, I personally don't know how people can stay open. And there's been an exodus of private docs into salaried positions. I know it's here in Georgia and throughout the country. Do you see the same thing happening in New York?
Oh, absolutely. And that is going to be a disaster for the overall healthcare budget, because as soon as a doctor sells out, moves into a hospital setting, everything that they do is billable at a higher rate. So it's actually going to be more expensive to provide the same service. And the other thing is that once doctors are in that kind of a situation, and this has been very well documented, and we, of course, witnessed this as house staff, they become much less productive.
Mm-hmm.
They start to think, well, you know, what's my hourly wage, and, you know, how much work am I actually going to be doing for this hourly wage? And there is a disincentive to go the extra mile, and that is now, of course, starting in the training program. When you turn over your patients at the end of the shift, you don't follow them the way we used to, through the night and through the next day. You just turn them over and someone else takes care of them. So they're already into that sort of shift work mentality, and that will continue in the hospital. And it's certainly less efficient. So doctors are going to be less productive, and they're going to be billing, or at least the hospital will be billing for them at a much higher level.
Yeah, let's make that crystal clear. It's not the doctor making money. The doctor's on salary. So everything that they do, and we've seen this in some of those HCA hospitals where people came into the ER and everybody got a $1 million workup, whether they needed it or not, for chest pain, because the hospital was going to bill for it. And I've worked in hospitals like that where I was getting consulted for ENT for things like earwax where they didn't even bother to look in the ear, and it's all billable to the hospital. So this is a system that's rife for graft and for fraud and for just like ginning up the bill, and patients are going to be on the hook for it. And I thought it was very interesting, frankly, that Obamacare doubled down on the most expensive iteration of healthcare. The hospital's got a break. The pharmaceutical companies got to pass, you couldn't use your HSA accounts to buy generic drugs or over-the-counter. It had to be brand name. The unions got a subsidy. I mean, it was everybody who was big business, big ticket, just gaming, just windfall into their pocket, where the doctors were held out as the people trying to cut feet off and take tonsils out, and greed, greed, greed. And we sat there and listened to this. You are a member of AAPS. What is up, in your opinion, with our colleagues? How can we, as a group of professionals, be treated like dirt and come in and say, give me some more? What is that?
Well, there is a split in medicine between the field workers, people who are out there in the trenches delivering frontline primary care, for example, and the academics in the hospital. The medical school and academic elites tend to have a central planning mindset, is what I found. Mm-hmm. That they feel that they are, in fact, smarter than everybody else, and they ought to be able to dictate the way everybody practices medicine. So they buy into the whole government control of healthcare, and a lot of these single-payer advocates are academic physicians. So they are, in effect, the enemy of the medical profession. Many of them have limited practices because of course, they're salaried. They're an academic field. They may be doing some research and some teaching, but they have limited practices, but they want to control everybody else's practice. So they buy into it. Now, the doctors who are out there practicing, I think, largely understand what's happening. And I think that there are natural allies, but they feel either, you know, like they're helpless, they can't really do anything about it, or they are bludgeoned by their day-to-day practice. They have so much to do just to make ends meet, to make a little money, that they don't have time to get involved in the politics of it.
Well, if you don't, you're going to end up being on the trash heap and being victimized. And that goes for every American at this point, quite frankly, that if you go along and get along with this, there isn't a rainbow at the end of this. There is hospice, there is rationing, there is taxation of your, you know, if you do work, which I found out yesterday, 90 million people in this country don't even work, which is really amazing. But if you do have a job, you're going to have this pipeline of Obamacare siphoning out your money before you even get to see it. And it's not going to be used for you. I mean, I think people don't understand the difference between health care and health insurance. They've been conflated to be the same thing, but they're not. So you can cover and have insurance, not even afford to use it. Now, I think that's exactly what Obamacare is doing with capitation, deductibles, coinsurance. It's all out of pocket. And I've read these stories now that are starting to come out where people have tripling of their deductibles. Maybe their premiums go up a small amount, but from $2,000 to $6,000 deductible, you might as well say that the person, you can't afford to access your health insurance.
Right. And they've come up with this new version of the HMO, which is called the ACO, the Accountable Care Organization, which is going to be the model for delivery of health care that, by the way, is untested. I mean, they just finished a demonstration project where over half the organizations that signed on were losing money, and several decided not to go on with it, and a few are switching to a different model. So probably a disaster in the making, but that nevertheless, that's how it's going to be pushed on people. They're going to be assigned to a group of accountable care physicians, and they're accountable, of course, to the organization, not to the patient.
Hmm.
They're going to get paid a lump sum per patient to take care of all their health needs. Well, what is that going to do? Obviously, it's going to lead to these groups cherry-picking the healthiest patients and trying their best to keep them out of the hospital, which is not a bad thing in and of itself, but when you're sick and you really need to be in the hospital, there's going to be an incentive not to hospitalize, and that is going to lead to deaths and bad outcomes, and it will be the same kind of a disaster the HMO was, because it's almost exactly the same model.
It didn't work then. People were clamoring to leave the HMO capitation model because they couldn't see specialists. They couldn't, in a timely way, get in to see their doctor.
Right.
And, you know, I think that also dovetails with what the government has done with Medicare, where hospitals won't be reimbursed if the person is readmitted within 31 days with the same diagnosis. So now you have a double pressure to treat people as outpatients, to, you know, tide them over, try to prop them up, whether they should be or not. And it's not bad medicine if the person needs to come into the hospital because they're sick. It's making the doctor and the patient at odds with each other.
That's right.
They have different goals. One is to make money, and because they're actually employees of the hospital. So the will of the doctor is gone. It's now the will of the hospital and the board of directors and the people and the CEOs and the CMOs and all those other people, and it's not the individual doctor who cares about his patient. And I've seen some hospitals set up in such a way that if patients get admitted, the doctors aren't even on staff. It goes to the house staff, the house doctors, to take care of them.
Right.
And you don't even get to see your your primary care physician. They don't even know what's going on with you. They get a report at the end when you get discharged. What kind of continuity of care is that?
No, it's really, really poor. And interestingly, this readmission penalty is it's a product of previous government meddling. Hmm. The government decided back in the 80s that they would pay hospitals prospectively based on the diagnosis, right? The DRG, the diagnosis-related group, which meant that hospitals would get a lump sum per diagnosis, per admission, and they therefore started to create tremendous pressure on the physicians to discharge patients early. And length of stay became the biggest number in your dictionary. If you had a low length of stay, you were great, and if you had a long length of stay, you were awful. You were costing the hospital money. So the pressure to discharge patients led to many readmissions. You know, big surprise, right?
Yeah.
So what do? They come up with another policy. They're going to penalize you for readmission.
Is there any way that doctors who actually know something can start getting their voices heard? I mean, AAPS is now, I know, doing working the legal system to try to stop this process. But what would you recommend to physicians who, you know, you are solo, you don't have a big group behind you? Is there anything that we can do to help our patients and help ourselves, in your opinion?
Well, get informed, and I would love to have more people join AAPS. We really are feeling kind of lonely out there fighting this fight, and we're fighting for everybody. Everybody who practices private medicine ought to join AAPS. We're fighting things like maintenance of certification.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that every 10 years you have to go through an expensive process and retest in order to maintain your specialty certification. No other arena in professional life has that, and it doesn't improve patient care. And it's strictly a money-making operation for the testing people and the educational people. So we have launched a lawsuit challenging the ABMS for their monopoly over this whole process. We have a new lawsuit coming out against Obamacare based on the fact that the law that is currently being implemented has been unconstitutionally changed from the original law that was passed in 2010. The administration has made all sorts of changes, like delaying the employer mandate, giving out all these waivers, dropping the cap on out-of-pocket expenses. All these things were done unilaterally by the administration without authority. In other words, they can't change a law, right? They don't have the authority under the Constitution to just change a law. So we are suing, hopefully this week or next week, to get an injunction against the implementation of Obamacare, because it's not the same law that was actually passed.
That's awesome.
So I'd love to have more people join us. AAPSonline.org is where you will find us. And I want to also appeal to patients to look into opting out. And there are some very good websites that you can go to. One is Twyla Braze, who has the Citizen Council for Health Freedom. So CCHfreedom.org, I believe, is her website, and they have a lot of information to help patients who are interested in opting out of Obamacare specifically. And I just found another website which is extremely good, called the Self-Pay Patient.
Yeah, I just learned about that one, too.
I think it's just recently been put up, and it really is a great resource for patients who want to try to find doctors who will take direct pay.
Actually, I just email them because I want to become a resource for them and have my group, my practice, put up on their website. I think people, now that they know that they have some power, they don't have to sit here and take it. Now it's time to take some action. I agree with you.
Yeah, the people have to act in their own defense. We cannot wait for the government. We just saw what happened. I mean,
yeah.
I really applauded the stand taken by Ted Cruz and Mike Lee and the House Republicans in trying to defund Obamacare.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, they were shot in the back by their Republican rhino colleagues in the Senate, like John McCain.
Yeah.
If they had held firm, who knows what would have happened. But that just shows us that the Washington system is not reliable. It's gotten us into this mess. We cannot count on them to get us out of it. We have to take things into our own hands by protecting ourselves, getting out of the government-run systems, and getting doctors who will be outside the system to watch out for us.
I absolutely agree with you. I don't think I could have said it better. I know you have to run, so I want to thank you again for coming on the show. This is Dr. Richard Amerling. How can people reach you if they want to?
Well, you can find me on aapsonline.org. And you can also, you know, my email is changing because our hospital has been taken over by your alma mater.
Sorry.
But, you know, you can reach me through aapsonline.org, and all of my comments and op-eds are up there, plus many excellent op-eds by my colleagues. So if you want to have a good starting point to read up on this, that's where I would go. And please leave comments and join.
Excellent. I hope you would come back. I'd love to have you back on as a guest.
Anytime.
Thank you.
All right, take care.
All right.
Bye-bye.
For years, Peachtree Ear, Nose, and Throat Center has been providing outstanding care to patients of all ages. They are dedicated to patient satisfaction and have been the recipient of the Georgia Otolaryngology Association Patient Satisfaction Award. They welcome any questions you may have about their services. Their practice includes treatment of asthma, allergies, sleep apnea, snoring, hearing impairments, and chronic sinus disease. Dr. Elena George is a board-certified ear, nose, and throat surgeon. Her training in New York has included training at Manhattan Eye, Ear, and Throat Hospital and Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. She believes in practicing both the art and science of medicine. All patients are seen by Dr. George. All treatment options are discussed, and time will be spent to answer all questions. Their office is located in Atlanta at 1776 Peachtree Road in Suite 260 North Tower, two blocks south of Piedmont Hospital. They are open Monday through Friday, 8:30 a.m. until 4 p.m. Additional details are available at www.peachtreeentcenter.com. At Peachtree Ear, Nose, and Throat Center, you can be confident that you are in good hands with their professional team.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
This is Dr. Elena George with your health tip of the day. Did you know that wellness and prevention is the key to living a long and healthy life? For example, common diseases such as acid reflux, high cholesterol, non-insulin-dependent diabetes, and high blood pressure in some cases are caused by poor nutrition. Scientific studies suggest the use of nutritional supplements, a healthy diet, and exercise can control and in some cases prevent disease. Use nutritional supplements that are formulated using good manufacturer practice standards, and remember to let your doctor know what you are taking since it can react with prescription medication. Please join me Wednesdays at 9 a.m. for Medicine on Call. This is Dr. Elena George.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. Dr. Amerling actually brought up a ton of thoughts that I think, and I want to just expand on. You know, this Obamacare thing, I think, Dave, we've talked about this in the past. It's a Trojan horse for single payer. I'm convinced of that. The fact that the insurance companies are dropping their enrollees like hotcakes, especially if they have pre-existing conditions, especially if they're individuals, especially if they're small businesses, then this is a bigger picture here. And everybody who gets thrown off of an insurance potentially has nowhere else to go except an exchange. And the government is trying to prime the pump. They've, as Dr. Amerling mentioned before, have delayed the cap on the individual out-of-pocket. It went from technically $2,000. Now it can be anything. We're seeing already that people are paying upwards of $6,000 for people with children with medical problems. We see that the amount that you can deduct or the amount that that you can write off has doubled almost from about 7,000 to almost 14. So this is costing people a ton of money. It's not about being user friendly, and it's very mercenary with a sugar coating of we care and we love you, and anybody who's against it is a racist and hates people and want them to die. So that whatever you have an actual thought, an argument, an idea, a question about this system, you're just shut up. They don't want you to ask the questions. And it's just lying wholesale. I mean, some of the stuff that's coming out about the rollout is laughable. So you have the government now saying that it was beating expectations and that there's 500,000, or I think it was over 1 million unique visitors, when in actuality I understand that they're counting the number of refreshes. When people get locked in, they have to refresh the button. They're counting that as people visiting the site uniquely. It's ridiculous. Nobody's really signed up for it. I think they're saying, I read an article this morning, that it's like 100,000 to 1 of the people who are being thrown off their health insurance versus those who actually have signed up for Obamacare. This is a joke, but it's working. It's working beautifully because the whole point was to reconfigure the healthcare system. It's 1/6 of the economy. Before, it wasn't controlled by the government per se. Maybe Medicaid and Medicare, or Medicare basically. Now we're talking about everybody having to pay in to this Ponzi scheme, whether they like it or not. And really the funny part about it, it's not funny, it's actually very sad, but the people who signed up for these exchanges, who put their demographic information in, and they got nowhere, they think it did go somewhere. It went to the NSA, it went to the government, it went to the IRS, and now they have your Social Security number, your financial information, where you live, your telephone number, and when you don't sign up, they're coming for you with some fines. And I don't know, I'm not touching that website, but I wonder if you had to give your banking information with your routing information. If you did, God forbid, they're going to suck that money out by electronic transfer, whether you like it or not. It's already coming. I mean, in terms of signing up, the employer has to give their EIN, the tax ID number. You have to give your ACH debit number. They were asking for that from the Department of Labor about a year and a half ago. So this is a system. It's a grid. It's a system that there's no free range. There's no cash pay. They want this, I believe, to be no cash pay. Everything controlled by the grid. Not only what I'm able to tell you as a doctor in terms of your treatment options, but also how much, where your money goes as a patient. It's not, they don't want it to go to a private doctor as a cash pay transaction because they can't control it. I won't be driven by an algorithm. I won't hype vaccinations. I won't, you know, if I were a GYN doctor, OB, want to do termination of pregnancies. I don't want to cover it. I'm a Christian. I don't want to pay for that. Because I have conscientious objection to it. It's morally wrong, in my opinion. But now I'm complicit because my tax dollar is being used for this. And they lied about it. And it's against the law. Government funds cannot be used for abortion. That's the law. And they just flouted it. So anybody who thinks that they're now all of a sudden going to start telling the truth about how fabulous it is and how much they love you and how you can get something for free, I got another thing coming for you. I mean, you're really delusional is one way to put it. But Dave and I talked in the break. There's willful delusional. You know, if you want to be deluded, if you want to be treated like an idiot, let's put it that way, and like it, and then after it hits you, then say, I didn't know, and now I'm powerless. It's really hard karmically to come back from that. Everybody knows that there's something wrong with this. I think in people's guts, they know this is not working out the way they thought it was going to work out. Yet there's still some of them doubling down because it's their party or their identification, their mindset of, I need to belong to something bigger than myself. I'm such a small person, I can't exert my own will. Well, when you do that, then you let the will of whatever take over. And it's not for us. It's not for patients. It's not for doctors. It's not about healthcare. And it's about controlling everything about your life from the cradle, unfortunately, to the grave. And Dr. Amling alluded to it, but the quality of healthcare in the system is going to be drastically different than what you have now. I can see it already. We're being denied for routine things that were approved a year ago, now have to go through pre-certification or being denied. For example, I'm an ear, nose, and throat doctor. If I do sinus surgery, we need to have the patient come back at minimum of 3 times after surgery to clean out the sinus. Now, one of the insurance companies is saying you can only do it twice. After that, it's just you're on your own. The patient, you have to just eat the charge. Well, that damages the patient's health care. This is a known, accepted practice from the our specialty board. This is how many times that you need to come back for proper care. An insurance company just superimposes themselves on that and says, no, you don't need to do that. No, it's experimental. When that's now the insurance company. I can go to the insurance commissioner and complain. When it becomes the government, I've got nothing. I can go to Catherine Sebelius? Yeah, okay. I mean, that's going to work out really well. So this is where the system is moving towards. A ton of money being given to cronies, to friends of the government, to big business, or I should say, corporate interests that drive the healthcare dollar, not the doctor. We talked in before about where the money goes. The doctors are a small piece of the cost of healthcare, especially independent doctors. It's the hospitals, it's the drug companies, it's the medical insurance industry where the money really goes to. And they now have full control of the system. And with the bully pulpit and the stick of the government backing them up. So if you don't play their game, you as a patient won't get good care. Me as a doctor, if I ever join this system, would be compelled to do what they ask me to do, or I won't be practicing. And it's time to take your power back. I say it all the time. He just gave excellent examples of how you do it. I actually didn't know that Medicare patients had as much power as they actually do. Don't sign up for Part D and Part B. Get something like Aflac, where you're actually paying for an entity to cover you, not to deny you. How can you buy insurance and they tell you you can't do X? That doesn't even make sense. That's like having car insurance and them saying, well, I'm not going to pay for your car accident because I choose not to. But you have insurance for that purpose. So now you have insurance for health care, yet you can't get the medication you want. You have to buy a prescription drug when you don't want one. You have to, I'm sure they're going to mandate vaccines at some point. I'm sure they're going to come for that. They're doing it in schools, which is not legal. And by the way, those parents out there who have children who are in public school system or private and they tell you you have to do it, you can write a waiver saying that I refuse on whatever grounds you choose. Medical, religious, they cannot make you do it. It's not a law. So make sure you know your rights, because if you don't, they're going to step all over them. I don't know what to say. I mean, I feel like people are just sheep. They're lemmings going to the slaughter.
Greg Williams yesterday was talking on his show, Greg's List. He went into the Obamacare, or to Obamacare, and went as far as they start. He said it popped up. The information we have is that you refinanced a home at X amount of interest and yada-da-da-da. And Greg said at that point they were into his credit report. That's the only way they could find out about this. And they had done it very quickly, obviously. And he said that's it. He pulled the plug and said he didn't. He was just checking out. He wasn't joining. He was just.
Yeah, but they already had you. Once you went in there surfing, you had the fact that you had to give your information of your Social Security and your demographics before you got to see the list of your cafeteria of choices is a problem. You should be able to search that thing and then decide, hey, I want to do it, and let me sign in. But no, they wanted that information before they even told you anything. And what they're quoting apparently is definitely not real, because the subsidies are calculated into that. Who knows if you're going to get a subsidy? So they're under reporting or under emphasizing what you're actually going to pay. Nobody even knows what the price is really going to be. Even the insurance companies admitted they don't know how much it's going to be. And they won't really until everybody signs in, because you don't know how many healthy people there are, how many sick people there are. You can't say how much it's going to be because it's up in the air. It's a joke.
At the rate they're going, it could be years and years and years before they get enough to...
True, but I don't put it past them to rope in those that put their information in. It's easy demographic information. They got it. And I understand, too, now, it's very interesting that I'm listening to a radio show. Somebody called in and said that they're using, if you buy alcohol or if you buy lighter fluid, that they're asking for ID. And not only are they asking for your ID, they're swiping your card, your driver's license. Your information is being entered into a national database. This is a big grid. This is whoever controls your information controls you. And it's everywhere. You wouldn't even think anymore. It's just subtle and all-inclusive. And there is no way, technically, they hope, for you to escape. But I don't really believe that. I think that we always have options if we choose not to play this game. So let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
Have you heard of quantitative fluid analysis? Commonly called QFA, this test assesses your body at a cellular level and gives insight into your illness. Peachtree Ear, Nose, and Throat Center offers the QFA, an FDA-approved test that can often provide early diagnosis of conditions before they can be detected with other tests. Dr. Elena George believes in an integrative approach to medicine. She believes in treating the problem and not the symptom. Following a review of your results, Dr. George will suggest treatment approaches such as nutritional counseling and/or the use of pharmaceutical-grade enzymes and nutritional supplements. Surgery and prescription medication will be recommended only when necessary. Peachtree Ear, Nose, and Throat Center is located in Atlanta at 1776 Peachtree Road Northwest in Suite 260 North Tower, two blocks south of Piedmont Hospital. They are open Monday through Friday, 8:30 a.m. until 4 p.m. Additional details are available at www.peachtreeentcenter.com. Call their office at 404-591-9100 to make an appointment and mention that you heard this ad on Radio Sandy Springs and get 10% off of QFA testing.
Hi, this is Kate Copsey inviting you to listen year-round to America's Homegrown Veggie Show every Saturday at 10 a.m.
This is Dr. Elena George with your health tip of the day. Did you know that snoring can lead to chronic health problems? Snoring can be a sign of sleep apnea. Snoring is simply noisy breathing that can disturb those around you. However, sleep apnea is a serious condition that leads to a decrease in oxygen in the blood. The brain and the heart are two organs that depend on oxygen to function well. Studies have shown that a lack of oxygen at night leads to weight gain, problems with memory and concentration, depression, high blood pressure, obesity, diabetes, and stroke. There are several ways to decrease snoring. For example, lose weight if you are overweight. Avoid alcohol at least 3 to 4 hours before bedtime. Stop smoking. Control nasal allergies to things such as dust and mold. And avoid eating dairy products such as milk and cheese. If you think you have sleep apnea, you should see a doctor to be evaluated. Please join me on Wednesdays at 9 a.m. for Medicine on Call. This is Dr. Elena George.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. I also wanted to really, I wanted my listeners to understand what's going on from a hospital perspective. We talked briefly about how the fact that Obamacare doubles down on the most expensive pieces of healthcare, the hospitals, the things that cost the most are being coddled and being put forth as the only method of treatment. They don't want people to do holistic or integrative medicine. They don't want people to use supplements. There's an attack now in the government, especially in Congress, every time they try to get rid of the supplements or the ability for people to buy them with a CODIS alimentarius. That's what that is. It's a UN-based, I don't know, what do you want to call it, movement against private, or I should say healthy, treatment options. It's all about pills and drugs and writing prescriptions. Dr. Hemelings now is a victim, unfortunately, of what we've seen happening, where hospitals are Pac-Manning other hospitals. Mount Sinai now apparently just bought Beth Israel. And we've seen it here in Georgia. And it's all about bigger is getting more powerful and being able to withstand the changes of healthcare. There's been a lot of press recently about hospitals losing money because the reimbursements under Medicare and Medicaid have dropped. They're not getting what they expected to get from the government, so they're laying people off. They're giving them early retirement. They're not hiring anybody. And so the healthcare sector is now going into a slump, which, you know, I don't have a lot of sympathy for, since they could care less about patients. And it was all about how do we corner the market, become the biggest game in town, put our competition out of business, and especially the privates, as many as we can sink, we're going to do so that you only have one place to go if you're a patient. Now they're reaping what they sowed. So now they've got these huge facilities. I've talked about this a lot. 50 flat screen TVs in the last OR that I went to or operated out of. Beautiful facilities. But did you need 50 flat screen TVs? Just because you can doesn't mean you should. So they're spending all this money, all this construction. Now they're stuck. And what's coming next is, because this show is all about next, is they're not going to depend on Medicaid and Medicare. They know that's a joke. They know they're going to go out of business if they do that. So now they're making their own insurance companies. Piedmont and Wellstar in Georgia now have joined together to form their own insurance company. This is not about healthcare access. It's about getting you into their silo, trapping you in it as a patient and a doctor, and you will not have choice. Piedmont people who join this can't go to Wellstar. They have to stay in Piedmont and vice versa. Those in Wellstar have to stay in Wellstar. Suppose your doctor is a Piedmont doctor and you're in a Wellstar system. You can't use that insurance for that doctor. And suppose that's not the best doctor in town. Suppose the specialist is an independent who probably will be, private practice. You can't use your insurance to go to them. So they're sticking you in a system based on nurse practitioners. And I'm sorry, I'm not trying to talk badly about anybody. Nurse practitioners are physician assistants. But the bottom line is 6-10 years of training does not equal 2 or 3. It can't. Those guys just don't have the same training as we do. It is what it is. It's a team approach. Everybody has a part to play. And the extenders have been given an increasing share of this pie of healthcare delivery. And I don't think it's fair to them, quite frankly. I don't expect somebody to get a little extra weekend training to be able to run an ICU, to put a line in, to understand the pathophysiology of what happens when somebody is terminal or becoming terminal. How do you reverse that? When do you know when to call a consult? You don't know that. You know, if A is right, I go to B, and if B is right, I go to C, and that's what you do. That's not fair to the patient or to them or to doctors. So we're doubling down on a system that will glorify that, expand that, and now patients, if they do join, it's made to sound like it's a great system, but you don't have options. And if that hospital doesn't offer, and a lot of hospitals now don't offer, for me, physical therapy or speech therapy, something that we send our patients to who have voice problems. It's taken months to find a place in the city here that actually still offers it. They've outsourced it all. It's gone on to private locations. Well, what happens if you're in that insurance company and your hospital doesn't have it? You have to pay out of pocket for it and go somewhere else? So this is about capturing the healthcare dollar. The government's going to do its thing. These hospitals, as long as they're allowed to, they're going to do their thing. And the patients are going to be on the outside looking in, paying for the privilege of hopefully getting some help. And I don't think you're going to get it if you're really sick. You're going to get it if you don't really need it. If you need a little pill for blood pressure here or there, no problem. But if you need a heart transplant, if you need a bone marrow transplant, if you need something that's a big ticket, or you need Avastin, one of the cancer chemotherapy drugs for breast cancer, but you want to use it for ovarian cancer, you're not doing it. Because some person on high, some academic, which I think Dr. Amling did a wonderful job of telling you who these people are, non-practicing physicians who think they know everything, who feel special, and who decide whether you live or die. And they have the nerve to try to make you feel bad about saying, that's not right. That's what single payer is. And Dave, you asked me to tell people what single payer is. Single payer is a government-based system, healthcare system, where all the payments are divvied out by the government. You pay into a huge pot. There really isn't a private entity associated with this. This is like socialized medicine. Everybody pays through their taxes, through their payroll taxes, through their private taxes into this pot. And then it gets divvied out to those who are felt to be the most worthy. And that's going to mean, if it's complete lives under Ezekiel Emanuel's theory, people from 16 to about 40. Anybody outside of those ranges, you don't get healthcare dollars spent on you if they can help it because you're not productive. If you're young, no one knows what your potential is. If you've got multiple medical problems, you're just costing the system a ton of money. But will you be able to become a productive tax-paying citizen? Nobody knows. So, hey, why bother? And if you're 50-plus, the older you get, the worse it's going to be. You've outlived your usefulness. You've already paid into the system. You've already worked. Nothing else that you're only going to take now, so we need to get rid of you too. And just leave the people who are going to add something, not the, quote, useless eaters. That's what they think of you. That's what the government thinks of you. That's what socialized medicine thinks of you. And I can tell you, preview what socialized medicine down the road will mean because I see it in the Caribbean. I experienced it. They don't have enough medication in their system in some of these hospitals in the Caribbean to actually run an IV, to do surgery. Their surgery is now emergency only because they can't pay their bills to buy these supplies to have elective surgery. And I was enlisted by the government, all privates, where can you take up some of the slack for these patients who we can't help? That's what's coming in the United States. And if you're not part of a silo, if you don't have the money to join a healthcare system like Piedmont's or whatever city you're in, then what do? You're stuck. But your money's still going out, but you can't afford to access it. I want to know what that lady thought when her $2,000 deductible became $6,000. What is she thinking? Can she really afford to even go to a doctor knowing now that she's got a triple out of pocket and pay her mortgage and eat? I don't know about that. But that's what you're going towards while they're telling you how bad you are, how you're so selfish for questioning such a system. You've got options. It's time to start using them. Self-pay patient, aapsonline.org, my website, www.peachtreeentcenter.com. You can email me. I'll be happy to give you any information. Medibid, the Christians organizations, where if you join up as a member, then you get to share the cost. And it's self-pay. It's not insurance. Everybody's paying into this pool. No one's telling you can't do something. It's cost-sharing in a proper manner, not someone taking all the pie and then telling you should be happy with a sliver. So Obamacare is not a foregone conclusion. I think that's what I want everybody to understand. If you opt out of this system as a senior, as a young person, it shrivels on the vine. It cannot run. It's already not running. They can't even get people to sign into it. Now what we need people to do is decide, I want to stay healthy. I want to stay with a private independent physician who I can talk to and make a deal with financially and keep my health care costs down. God forbid you have to go in the hospital, then get catastrophic insurance to cover that. Get Aflac as your supplemental. I would stay away from AARP since they stood to gain and they were bandwagon flag waivers for this nonsense and, in my opinion, sold every single senior who is part of their membership down the toilet. So, in a nutshell, after preaching for a little bit, I just want people to take back their power. Government is not on your side in this, and I think it's now time for patients to start having a conversation, honest conversation, with their physician. Ask them really what they think, and they'll tell you, especially if they're not a member of a hospital. And start making plans to take your power back. On that note, you're listening to Medicine on Call. I'll see you next week.